Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Lies My Teacher Told Me when we come back. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you anyway, and how much do you really want your government to know about you? Well, our government knows only as much about us as we tell them about ourselves. Everything that government, industry, or business knows about us is because we told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects us in our persons, houses, papers, and effects, but it doesn't protect us from ourselves. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. This information is being gathered and stored in a very reasoned and a very logical manner for later retrieval and use. And it's knowing how this information is being gathered, what information is being stored, and what information do you want to keep personal and private that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. So always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you haven't revealed to them by your own hand or by your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for our free general law CD package? That's a four-hour program. Remember, it's entertaining, it's informative, it's educational, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? Lies My Teacher Told Me. Have you ever been lied to? Did you get an education from the public school system, and do you think that maybe your teacher told you a lie or two? Maybe an exaggeration or two. You know, something like Columbus discovered America, or the Pilgrims originated the first Thanksgiving. Do you remember those stories when you read those history textbooks about the Pilgrims? And now, the Pilgrims were real people, and they did a very noble, a very historical event. Columbus discovering America is a very significant event, but wouldn't it be interesting to see what did Columbus actually do? What did the Pilgrims actually do, as opposed to what we've been told that they actually did? How would that change history? How would that change your perceptions of history? How would that change your behavior? And we need to ask ourselves, well, if the story of Columbus isn't true, at least it's not true in its totality, then what's the purpose for the lies? Why is it that we're being fed inaccurate truths, inaccurate facts, inaccurate stories about Columbus discovering America? You know, the first thing that we ought to ask is this. It says Columbus was the first European to discover America. Columbus was the first European to discover America. I heard that he was the first man to discover America. Now, the first thing that we should understand, just think about it for a minute. That's not true. That's a lie. Because when Columbus arrived here, there were already people here. You know, that's very significant. If you arrived at a location and there were already people there, it would be pretty obvious that you're not the first one to discover this place. The discovery of America, I don't know who the first guy was that discovered it. Columbus was the first Italian to discover it. He might have been the first, from Spain to discover America. But he wasn't the first European to discover America. He wasn't the first man to discover America. And shouldn't we just delete that from the story? In other words, I'm not suggesting that we just ignore Columbus. He did a pretty valuable service at the time that he made his discoveries, but it isn't quite true, the story that we're being fed. Now, the pilgrims, remember, the first Thanksgiving. Have you heard the first Thanksgiving story? Well, we'll take a look at what really happened with the pilgrims. Now, they're good people, and there's no arguments about that, but there's a story about the pilgrims that you've never heard. And I hadn't heard until I picked up this book on lies my teacher told me, and I thought, wow, that's pretty interesting. It's interesting not just from a curious point of view, it's interesting from a propaganda and a historical point of view. Because we haven't been lied to about the first Thanksgiving and about Columbus discovering America for no good purpose. There's a reason for this. There's an agenda. There's an outcome that comes from this educational perversion. It would be just as easy to teach us when the first Thanksgiving did actually occur and who it was that did it. And it wasn't the pilgrims. So why are we being told that story? It is true that America was discovered, but it wasn't discovered by Columbus. Wouldn't it be fascinating to know who discovered America and when did they discover America? How early after Noah's flood? Oh, excuse me. We're not taught anything about Noah's flood, now are we? Noah's flood is not in your history books. It ought to be, but it's not. That was a pretty significant event in history. And to ignore it, to lie about it, to cover it up, isn't being done accidentally. There's an agenda there. There's a purpose. There's a reason for burying Noah's flood, burying the creation. And it's political. It has to do with control. History is a modality for people control, in the same way that the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto are a modality for people control. It doesn't have anything to do with the truth or fairness or accuracy. It has to do with a political agenda. And we, that is you and I, are victims of this political agenda. I guess the word victim is correct, because if something's being done and it's debilitating to you, if it costs you money, if it causes you harm over time, I would say that you're a victim. Now, instead of being victimized, wouldn't it be better if we were unvictimized, if we had true facts? Let me take a look at a page. We'll go to page 12 and we'll take a look at Woodrow Wilson. Now, you and I, when we went to school, we learned a little something about Woodrow Wilson. He was the president during World War I here in the United States of America. And America participated in World War I, albeit not for very long. We were only in it for a year and a half. The rest of the powers were in it for 4 years. And America played a very important role in World War I. And Woodrow Wilson was a very important president. He did some things that have very far-reaching repercussions on America today. We are still suffering from, we are still living in the era of Woodrow Wilson. This economic crisis that you're all involved in began with Woodrow Wilson. It was Wilson's policies that created the Federal Reserve System, created the banking system that we're all so familiar with today, created the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto, and put it into operation here in the United States. You people in Australia, you have a central bank. And at some point in time, that central bank was imposed upon you. And you Canadians, you have a central bank, and at some point in time, that central bank was imposed upon you. These central banks now constitute the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto. Now, you also went to public school, you Canadians and Australians and New Zealanders and Europeans and Americans and so on. All of us go to public school. That's the tenth plank to the Communist Manifesto. And Woodrow Wilson had a lot to do with communism in the United States. Did you know that? They don't teach that in your history textbooks. And that's because it's politically incorrect. And this political correctness over here is a modality of people control. If you can get all of the people to believe in a fairy tale like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, those people will think in a term called groupthink. Groupthink. That came from Orwell's 1984. And it's a very important principle of governing. Groupthink. That's why public education is so important. The tenth plank to the Communist Manifesto is so important. And history is a very important part of that educational process that creates groupthink so that people cannot think independently. They think in a group, and the group is led by a leader. And your leader believes in groupthink. He knows the truth, but he believes in groupthink, and he espouses groupthink so that everybody in the group thinks the way the leader thinks. And that way they'll follow that leader. I mean, you Americans followed George Bush into Iraq, and you were looking for weapons of mass destruction that are not there, were not there, never were there. You've killed a million Iraqis, spent $1 trillion, and you're still fighting over there, and never once has it occurred to an American that we ought to stop. We made a mistake. We just keep right on. And that's because the war in Iraq has absolutely nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction. Never did, doesn't now, and never will. But that's part of the groupthink that we were all taught and trained to believe. And Americans, the vast, broad majority of Americans know full well there's no weapons of mass destruction. And then you all know, if you were still alive and breathing, and your brain was cogitating at that time, you know that the purpose for the war in Iraq was weapons of mass destruction. Can't you remember Colin Powell testifying before the United Nations, showing off the pictures and giving you the intelligence? Now, when you make a mistake like that, normally you would apologize and say, oh, I'm terribly sorry, we made a mistake, and then stop whatever the conduct or activity is. We've known this now for years, and there's no stopping. Republicans and Democrats are all united in the victory in Iraq. Victory? I mean, haven't we already achieved that? Saddam Hussein has been overthrown. I mean, what is it that constitutes victory? I have never heard John McCain or George Bush or anybody else stand up in a fireside chat and say, here are the 5 points that we want to achieve in Iraq, which will constitute victory. And when we achieve all 5 of these objectives, then we will have achieved victory, and then we will leave. And if you know what those 5 or 3 or 9 or whatever number of objectives, can you tell me, send me an email, would you? Let me know what victory constitutes, or what constitutes victory when we get through over there. I haven't got a clue. Not a clue. And now somebody said the other day, both Barack Obama and John McCain expect to have American troops in Iraq at least until 2013. Well, now, if you can tolerate American troops in Iraq until the year 2013. Now, we started in 03. That'll be 10 years. I mean, we've still got troops in South Korea. Now, remember, that war ended in 1953. Still have troops sitting over there. Well, are we going to have troops sitting in Iraq over the next 50 years? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out. Now, the reason that I bring this up is because groupthink and lies my teacher told me fit together like a hand in a glove. It's not an accident. There's a reason for it. So if you're one of those few, now the average guy who's involved in groupthink, he doesn't care about that. He's not concerned about the deceptions that have gone on in the Iraq war, but we all know they're there. And we all want change. See, we're all going to vote for change now in the upcoming election. But the bottom line to this is that no change ever occurs. You know, just more of the same goes on and on and on. And that's because of these historical lies. I'm going to show you what happens here. When you believe that the Pilgrims originated Thanksgiving, it brings you into groupthink. That's not necessarily the bottom line to the Iraq war, but it's certainly a part and parcel of it. It's your thinking processes that have you involved in war over in Iraq. And until your thinking processes change in mass, I mean, you got, 300 million people here in the United States. And until that thinking changes, you're never going to be able to correct the problems in your economy, your banking crisis. See, this banking crisis is real, and it actually occurs. It's a historical event. It's a monumental historical event. You're living right through it right now. You don't recognize the historical event for what it is today. That'll come 30, 40 years from now when historians are writing about the Great Depression of the 21st century, the Great Depression of the world, in the context of, great depressions of the past, like 1907, 1921, 1929, and so on. When the Roman Empire collapsed in 476 AD, the average Joe Sixpack on the streets of Rome did not say, "Oh my God, the great Roman Empire is collapsing." He didn't know that. Years later, he could look back on it, and historians said, "Oh, well, this is the year that it happened. Here are the events that were in the headlines in 476. Well, let's take a look at one here. Here's Woodrow Wilson. What we did not learn about Woodrow Wilson is even more remarkable. When I ask my college students to tell me what they recall about President Wilson, they respond with enthusiasm. And they say that Wilson led our country reluctantly into World War I. And after the war, he led the struggle nationally and internationally to establish the League of Nations. They associate Wilson with progressive causes like women's suffrage. A handful of students recall that Wilson's administration's Palmer raids against left-wing unions. But my students seldom know or speak about two anti-democratic policies that Wilson carried out. The first was his racial segregation of the federal government, and the second was his military interventions in foreign countries. People don't know anything about Woodrow Wilson and the Wilson administration and its foreign interventions in foreign countries, military interventions in foreign countries. Did you know that? Let's stop and think now for a minute. How much did you know about Woodrow Wilson? I mean, you think George Bush is intervening in foreign countries like Iraq and Afghanistan. Like, that's something brand new that, you gasp with horror, like Judy Hartson gasping, before she ran off to tell the teacher about some errant misdeed that I had just committed. You remember when you were in the third or fourth grade, and there was this prissy little girl, and she would gasp, "I'm going to go tell." See? So we have always had little snitches running around telling us, haven't we? Well, when was the last time you had some little snitch come around to tell you about Woodrow Wilson? Now, under Woodrow Wilson, the United States intervened in Latin America more often than at any other time in our history. Quite a statement. Under Wilson, 8 years as President of the United States, we intervened in Latin America more often than at any other time in our history. We landed troops in Mexico in 1914, in Haiti in 1915, the Dominican Republic in 1916, again in Mexico in 1916, and nine more times before the end of Wilson's presidency. We landed troops in Cuba in 1917, troops in Panama in 1918, and throughout Wilson's administration, Wilson maintained forces in Nicaragua, using them to determine Nicaragua's president and to force passage of a treaty preferential to the United States. Now, in 1917, Woodrow Wilson took on a major world power when he started sending secret monetary aid to the white side of the Russian Civil War. In the summer of 1918, Wilson authorized a naval blockade of the Soviet Union and then sent expeditionary forces to Murmansk, Archangel, and Vladivostok to help overthrow the Russian Revolution. With the blessing of Britain and France, and in a joint command with Japanese soldiers, American forces penetrated westward in Russia from Vladivostok to Lake Baikal, supporting Czech and White Russian forces that had declared an anti-communist government headquartered at Omsk. After briefly maintaining front lines as far west as the Volga River, the White Russian forces disintegrated by the end of 1919, and our troops finally left Vladivostok on April 1st, 1920. Now, let me pause right here and ask you, did you know anything about the Russian Revolution and the American participation in it from 1917 to 1919, 2 years? Did you know that American expeditionary forces were located in Russia, directing an alliance between the French, the British, and the Japanese? Now, you know, that's pretty important. Let me tell you why. Because right now, as I speak, there's a little country called Georgia. The average Joe Sixpack wouldn't be able to find Georgia. See, most people think that's a southern state here in the United States. We've got a state here called Georgia in the United States. I don't know why we call it Georgia. I imagined it was after King George. But anyway, there's a country called Georgia. It used to be a part of the Soviet Union. And it's located out at the end of the Black Sea. So if you go to the end of the Mediterranean Sea, you'll come to a country called Turkey. Now, there's another ocean behind the Mediterranean, another big sea. It's called the Black Sea. Now, just go up there to the Dardanelles Straits, and you'll see where this sea connects with the Mediterranean. Now, go down along the north coast of Turkey, all the way down to the end, you know, traveling east on the map. And you get to the end of it down there, and there's a little spot down there. It's not very big. I think it's about the size of Massachusetts. Something on that order. Ain't very big piece of real estate. And there's a little country down there. It's called Georgia. And right now, today, America has troops there in Georgia. Advisors, military advisors, soldiers. They're sitting right now. And we have military ships there. We have ships of the United States Navy down there. Now, this little country of Georgia borders on Russia, southern Russia. Now, if you were a Russian looking back at history, and you knew that American troops had landed in your country in 1918 and 1919, and was working to overthrow a government that had been established there, what would you think of that? You know, from the Russians' point of view. Now, the other day, I was just watching the news last night, and the Russians are now engaged in a joint military exercise. This hasn't been done since the end of the Cold War with Venezuela. See, the Venezuelans and the Russians are going to hold joint naval exercises in the Caribbean Sea, down in the southern Gulf of Mexico. Isn't that just special? Now, that's going to get a lot of people's attention. Got my attention right away because, you know, the idea of the Russians sending their ships over here to the Americas and holding military operations down there doesn't set well with me. Makes me nervous. Well, what do you think joint military exercises in the Black Sea, right next door to the Russians. How do you think they think about that? See? So, you know, the way you view history in groupthink is very important to you joining the army, training your children, and telling them to join the army or the Marines and go fight to make the world safe for Kosovo, or to make the world safe for South Korea, or to make the world safe for Georgia or someplace else. You have to have a rallying point. You have to have a reason for doing this. And it's very important in international geopolitics and in the mindset of people. You know, to get you people to go to war in a far-off land called Iraq, you know, you people have to have a mindset. And it comes from groupthink. If you'll notice, you'll find that the Cubans, the Haitians, and Dominican Republics, and the Brazilians, they're not sending joint naval forces off to a far, far land called Georgia. The Brazilians and Argentinians, you know, they're kind of minding their own business over in their own part of the world. Now, a few years back, there was a war between Great Britain and Argentina over the Falkland Islands. Now, you see, the British are maintaining long, you know, the Falkland Islands are about as far from England as you can get here on planet Earth. See, our world, you know, is only 25,000 miles in circumference. I mean, if you got onto the equator and you took a ride, you know, one way or the other, until you got back to where you started, it'd be about 25,000 miles. Well, then, you know, 12,500 miles is about as far away as you can get from the other side of the world. So if you want to get as far away from somebody else here on planet Earth, about 12,500 miles is about as far as you can get away from. Because by the time you get to 13,000 miles, you're 1,000 miles closer. You're only 11,000 miles in the other direction from that guy. Now, the English have had those Falkland Islands down there for a long time, and they've got English people living there. And those Englishmen, they kind of see the Falkland Islands as their piece of real estate. But the Falkland Islands are just off the coast of Argentina, see? The Falkland Islands are just out there a few hundred miles away from Argentina, but they're several thousand miles away from England. Now, those Falkland Islands at one time used to belong to the Argentines down there, and the English came down and took it away from them. And they haven't forgotten about that, and they'd kind of like to get them back. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but did you know that Formosa, there's a little country over there we call Formosa, Taiwan, that used to be a province of China, you know, until the Chinese had a civil war. Well, then there was an outcome to the Chinese Civil War, 1949, the Chinese Communists, the political party over there, they won the war, and a guy named Chiang Kai-shek, who was being backed by the United States, retreated from the mainland off onto this island called Taiwan. And so if you wanted to know what this Taiwan controversy is all about, it's the Chinese over there want their piece of real estate back. That's what that's all about. And there's always going to be controversy over that piece of real estate. Now, we Americans have an alliance with the Taiwanese, and I guess, I'm not quite sure how this is going to shake out, but I guess that if the Chinese attack Taiwan, then we're going to come in on the side of the Taiwanese and go to war against China. Boy, that's going to be a tussle. That's going to be quite a tussle. Remember, them Chinese now, they've got nuclear weapons. And they've got a billion people sitting over there, and they've got a philosophy of war. They've got a game plan. They think that they can go to war against the United States, and we can kill 90% of the Chinese, and they can win the war. Because they think that they can kill about half of us. And that when this war ends, there'll be 150 million Americans left alive and 10% of 1.3 billion Chinese. And they think that if they can kill half of us and we can kill 90% of them, they can win the war because there'll be more Chinese left over when it's all said and done. Isn't that amazing? That's a game plan. That's a strategy. And they're just biding their time. And they've said this publicly many, many times. We're just waiting for our time, and then we're going to attack. And now here we are exporting our steel mills to China, and we're making all these treaties with China and all these business arrangements with China. And they have been telling us for at least 50 years that their sole objective is to destroy the United States of America. And some of the time they're bristling with arms, and some of the time they're smiling and slapping us on the back and taking us to dinner. And groupthink has created a mindset among Americans, and you Americans do not believe that the Chinese are really serious. That is, if you've even heard of the Chinese plan. I don't know if the average Joe Sixpack American is even aware of the Chinese strategy for conquering the United States of America. I don't even know if you're aware of the fact that the Chinese want to destroy the United States of America. It would seem like to me that if I had an enemy and he wanted to kill me, I'd want to stay about as far away from that guy as I could get. I don't think I'd go to dinner with him. I don't think I'd go to the movies with him. I don't think I would enter into any business associations with this guy. But we Americans have done just exactly that. And our leaders, guys like George Bush and Dick Cheney and Colin Powell, do you think that those guys are ignorant of this Chinese desire to destroy the United States of America? No, I don't believe that for a minute. I think those guys are fully aware of it. And these are some of the lies that we learn in school. Lies, my teacher told me. Hey, hang on here, and let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-sectarian, non-profit law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now, be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. And they do not necessarily represent the views or the beliefs or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, Lies My Teacher Told Me, a book written by a fellow named L-O-E-W-E-N. Is that the way to pronounce that name? L-O-E-W-E-N. Let's call him Lowen. James W. Lowen. Write that name down. It's L-O-E-W-E-N. Lies My Teacher Told Me. A pretty big, thick book. The guy's a history teacher. And for all of you minorities out there, you'll love this book. I mean, if you're black or Indian, you're Asian, You belong to some little ethnic group. You're a Jew, a Russian, somebody. You'll love it. Because he gets right into telling the truth about the American Indians. From our point of view, we see American Indians as savages that were conquered because they were just a bunch of nobodies over here that were just kind of like the bare-knuckled Neanderthal who is dragging his knuckles on the back of the ground. And we don't ever see anything about the Indians, the Native Americans, the natives of North and South America as being the people with a civilization who were building pyramids. Did you know that the American Indians built pyramids both in North America and South America? Did you know that? Yeah. Here in the state, in the United States, we have a state called Illinois, and it's actually spelled Illinois, but if you say Illinois, they look at you like you're a savage, a Neanderthal. It's pronounced Illinois, but it's got an S on the end. And those American Indians built about 9 pyramids in that state. Did you know that? And I mean, these pyramids are big. They're as big as the pyramid, the Great Pyramid of Cheops in Egypt. Did you read about that in your history book? Yeah, I didn't either. Now, I haven't been to all 9 of those pyramids, but I went to one of them. And boy, I was really amazed. I walked up to the top of it. It's 400 feet high, and the top of it's flat, and it has 1/2 acre. The top of this pyramid, it sits out in the middle. You have to go to Illinois to appreciate this, but Illinois is about as flat as a waffle, about as flat as a pancake. And out here in the middle of this flat land is this great big mountain sticking up here, 400 feet in the air, and it's so big that it's a 1/2 acre in size up on the top of it. Down at the bottom, it's probably, I don't know, 20 acres. Yeah, and somebody built that, and it wasn't Columbus. Now, you can go to Europe and look all over the place, and you won't find anything of comparable size or symmetry, a monument like that anywhere in Europe. Now, they've got a lot of big monuments in Europe. I'm not denying that. The Cathedral of Notre Dame and so on. There's some big things over there. But nothing like these pyramids here in North America. And in South America, they got pyramids all over the place. I guess so many pyramids down here makes the Egyptians look like they took lessons over here. I mean, the Egyptians have got some pyramids over there. I don't deny that, But you could count the pyramids over in Egypt on a couple of hands. Surely by the time you take off your shoes, you'd have enough fingers and toes to count those pyramids over there. Here in the Americas, they're over here by the thousands. Did you know that? Yeah, I didn't know that either until I read this book Lies My Teacher Told Me. I thought these American Indians over here were all a bunch of Neanderthals. Well, that's what they told me. They came over here on a land bridge because they couldn't float a boat. I'm not so sure that was true. Well, not anymore. These American Indians were familiar with alphabets, mathematics, astronomy, and architecture. They built cities in South America that are hung on cliffs, built on top of mountains, built pyramids all over the Yucatan and Peninsula in South America and Central America into Mexico. Had cities that supported populations of millions long before the Europeans ever got to a city with 1 million people in it. The Indians over here in the Americas had populations of 1 million people in their cities. 300,000 people in a city was common. Now, that's not exactly a bunch of Neanderthal savages, dragging their knuckles on the ground or marauding around in the Amazon rainforest or over in the African rainforest now, is it? Did anybody ever tell you about those guys? Well, I never heard of them. That wasn't the story that I was told when I went to school. Now, that just gives you a little sidelight, looking at American Indians. The reason I tell you that I think that all of you American Indians, would be well served by looking at the book Lies My Teacher Told Me, because the people that control American politics, you know, the white Anglo-Saxons here, have a mindset. And their mindset, and after all, they're the guys that won the war, and they write the history. You know, whether it's true or false, you know, they're the ones that write the stories about the first Thanksgiving in Columbus and give us this mindset that we all live by. Now, we don't give credit then to the people that actually did the work, you know, the soldier on the ground. Now, there's a lot to be said about just telling the truth, you know, and it's a fascinating story about the American Indians, a fascinating story about the blacks and the Mexicans and so on. I mean, if you just tell the truth, just lay it out and say, well, here's what actually happened there. Here's what we were told happened, and this is what we all believe because we believe in groupthink and we practice that. But on the other side, here's what actually happened there. Going back to Woodrow Wilson, listen to this. Now, very few Americans who were not alive at the time, this is back during the First World War, know anything about our unknown war with Russia. To quote the title of Robert Maddox's book on this fiasco, not one of the 12 American history textbooks in my sample even mentions it. Okay, now let's pause right there. This fella, Lowen, reviewed 12 history textbooks that are used in the public school system here in the United States of America. And not one of those history textbooks mentions one word about the American intervention in the Russian Civil War from 1917 to 1919. Or the American role there, or the American pullout on April 1st, 1920. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, Russian history textbooks, on the other hand, give the episode considerable coverage. According to Maddox, the immediate effect of the intervention was to prolong a bloody civil war, thereby costing thousands of additional lives and wreaking enormous destruction on an already battered society. And there were longer-range implications. Bolshevik leaders had clear proof that the Western powers meant to destroy the Soviet government if given the chance. This aggression fueled the suspicions that motivated the Soviets during the Cold War, and until its breakup, the Soviet Union continued to claim damages for the invasion. Until 1989, the Russian government said, you know, you Americans owe us for the damages that you caused when you intervened in our civil war. All right, let's suppose the United States of America now is conducting a civil war. We did that here in this country. We've had our civil war. And let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion here, that Great Britain entered the war on the side of the South, sending troops and ships and military observers and gunpowder and so on to the Southern cause. Wouldn't we be suspicious of the British intention there? Wouldn't we be sitting here saying, geez, I think that the British intended to destroy the United States of America, to split it in two, to cause division here. Indeed, the Southern states wanted Great Britain to do just exactly that. The British didn't do it, but they were certainly thinking about it. And so, you know, bottom line here, the Russians, they're teaching their students over in Russia about this event in history, and we Americans learn nothing about it at all. Now, the Russians are creating a group think over in Russia, so the Russians are sitting over saying, you know, we're pretty suspicious of you Americans and of your American intentions. We Americans are sitting over here, kind of fat, dumb, happy, you know, be happy, smile, be happy. Not understanding the other side. Now, we're sending military supplies to this little country called Georgia, which would be about like the Russians sending military supplies to Mexico and holding, you know, the Mexicans out there and saying, we want the Mexicans to join a military alliance with us, the Russians and Chinese. Well, how would that make you feel down in Arizona or New Mexico, Texas? See? So, you know, if you take a look at the other guy, there's an old saying over here in America, you know, you need to walk a mile in this guy's moccasins. Now, I don't know about you, but Georgia, this little country of Georgia over here at the end of the Black Sea, has about as much strategic significance to me, you know, as a watermelon in December. It's just a non-sequitur. It's something that doesn't exist. It's just not there. Now, you know, if you go into a bar, you know, just to reduce this down to, you know, just you and me going into the bar, and we sit down on a bar stool, you know, we're sitting there and we're talking a little bit, you know, we could probably get along pretty good. Along comes some guy that just hates your guts and you hate his guts, and he sits down on the bar stool, you know, on the other side, and this guy turns away from you and starts buying drinks for your arch enemy. Woo! What do you think of that? You know, just looking at it, you know, pragmatically, you'd say, well, you know, I got my arch enemy over here on the other side of this guy over here, and I'm sitting over here, and this guy's in between. He's buying drinks for my enemy over here. Does that mean he's my friend? You know, you'd get kind of suspicious right away. Well, the Russians are sitting over there. Hey, you're buying drinks, you know, for these Georgians down here. And we and the Georgians aren't on the best of speaking terms. Now, you know, if you were smart, you know, you'd try to stay out of this. You know, maybe you'd be better off if you weren't buying drinks for this guy over here, because you know that they're enemies, you know. And so maybe what you might want to do is move to some other location and just kind of butt out. Now, I've noticed that in life, that if you butt out of other people's bitches in life, you'll have fewer bloody noses and fewer black eyes. Now, that's just my own personal observation. I'm an old man now, and I've seen that happen. You know, you go over here and you butt into somebody else's bitch, and all of a sudden, you know, somebody is busting you in the nose, you know, and you got blood flowing all over, and your lips are cutting, and you're feeling real bad, and wondering, well, how did this happen? Now, America has an agenda. And we have a worldwide empire. I don't know if you average Joe Sixpack Americans understood the size and scope of the American empire, but we Americans have troops in 150 countries around the world. Hell, there's only 209 countries in the world, and we got troops in 154 of them. Now, we have military bases in those 154 countries. It was 700. Last time I saw a number, 750. 750 military bases sitting in those countries. And those countries circle China and Russia. This is called encirclement. Now, you know, how would you feel if the Russians and the Chinese were to establish military bases, you know, right across from Alaska in Siberia? And then maybe they go up to the Mexicans and they say, now we'd like to establish a bunch of military bases, and we'd like to stick in some purely defensive missile launchers down here in Tijuana, Mexico. Because, see, the Americans have gone over to the Poles and the Czechs and are in the process now of sticking in these purely defensive rocket launchers in Poland and Czechoslovakia to protect us in the West from the Iranians. Now, let's suppose the Russians come over to the Mexicans and say, listen, now we're here to install these missile launchers to protect us from potential ballistic missile launches from Brazil. And we're afraid that they're going to launch these these missiles in Brazil and shoot them up over the North Pole and hit Moscow, and we want to shoot them down here in Tijuana, Mexico. And what would you think of that? Because that's what we Americans are doing. See, now we don't know that because we believe in the first Thanksgiving. And we believe in our history as it's given to us. And some of it is just BS, and some of it is just totally omitted. We don't talk about that. Now, the Russians are telling their students, they're telling their people over there, hey, you got to watch out for these Americans over here because they've got hostile attitudes toward us, as was demonstrated in 1919, 1918, 19, you know. And here's what American troops were doing. Now, we Americans aren't sitting here saying, well, the Russians had troops on our soil. See, we're not sitting over here telling that part of the story, but we're not telling the other part of the story that we had American troops on Russian soil, you know, at one time. And so that kind of fuels the mistrust and the distrust that we could probably go a lot further if we just butted out of Georgia and Kosovo. And if we weren't trying to encircle the Russians. Now, if the Russians aren't trying to encircle us, why do we think then that we need to encircle the Russians? What's the purpose behind that? I mean, just this thing, are we trying to encircle the Mexicans? Are we trying to encircle the Brazilians? Well, then why do we think that there's some great need to encircle the Chinese? You know, we're doing business with them. When we're importing all of their stuff, we've exported all of our manufacturing base to China, and at the same time, we're trying to encircle them. And we don't want to give them back that piece of real estate called Taiwan. You know, I'm not sure that we ought to or not. I'm not here to tell you what your Taiwan policy ought to be, but I thought I'd point out that historically, you know, there's a reason why the Chinese distrust Americans. There's a reason why the Russians aren't quite sure what our intentions are. And so I just thought I'd explore that a little bit from the eyes or from the perspective here of our history, because we Americans are lied to constantly. You Canadians and Australians and New Zealanders, do you know you've been lied to in your history books? And it's not just your history books. I mean, they're lying to you constantly. But they mix these lies with truth. There was a real president named Woodrow Wilson. And Woodrow Wilson was a great champion of the League of Nations. And he was a very significant historical fellow or a historical character on the world scene. And so they tell you that part of the story, but they don't tell you the rest of the story. They kind of gloss it over. Here's a little bit more to the story on Woodrow Wilson. Now, Wilson's invasions of Latin America are better known than his Russian adventure. Textbooks do cover some of those. And it's fascinating to watch textbook authors attempt to justify these episodes. Any accurate portrayal of the invasions could not possibly show Wilson or the United States in a very favorable light. With hindsight, we know that Wilson's interventions in Cuba, the Dominican Republic, Haiti, and Nicaragua set the stage for the dictators Batista, Trujillo, Duvalier, and Somoza, whose legacies still reverberate among those populations in those countries. Even in the 1910s, most of the invasions were unpopular in this country, and they provoked a torrent of criticism abroad. By the mid-1920s, Wilson's successors reversed these policies in Latin America, and the authors of history textbooks know this. For a chapter or two after Wilson, they laud our good neighbor policy, the reunification of force or the renunciation of force in Latin America by Presidents Coolidge and Hoover, which was extended by Franklin D. Roosevelt. Textbooks might, but they do not, call Wilson's Latin American actions a bad neighbor policy. Instead of calling it a bad neighbor policy, when faced with these unpleasantries, the textbooks wiggle to get their hero off the hook, as in his example from The Challenge of Freedom. President Wilson wanted the United States to build friendships with the countries of Latin America. However, he found this difficult. Some textbooks blame the invasions on the countries invaded. Necessity was the mother of armed Caribbean invention, states the textbook called The American Pageant. Land of Promise is vague as to who caused the invasions, but seems certain that they were not Wilson's doing. Now, here are American textbooks, history textbooks, and they cast Woodrow Wilson, rather than telling the story about Woodrow Wilson and what his motivations were. Maybe his interventions in Latin America were necessary. You know, from America's point of view, maybe it was good policy. Maybe when we get through with looking at the history of the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War, historians will vindicate President Bush and say it was necessary. And if we hadn't done this, oh my God, America would have been invaded by Iraqis and Afghanis and destroyed. I don't know what history is going to say, but there was a purpose. Now, there's another neat little book over here, which is called The War is a Racket. Remember this, Smedley Butler? Well, Smedley Butler, back from 1900 to about 1930, was a three-star Marine general. And he says, now, the reason for going into Nicaragua and Haiti, the Dominican Republic, and Mexico was to protect the banking interests of the Wall Street bankers. And that's what we're doing today. We're protecting the banking interests of Wall Street. That's why we have these bailouts. Americans are not incensed by the bailouts of the Wall Street bankers. They are not incensed about the war in Iraq being a war over oil for Enron and British Petroleum. It's a big oil company, ExxonMobil. It's these big oil interests. And the United States military services are there for the purposes of protecting the commercial interests of American business. That's the purpose for your Army, Navy, and Marines. Doesn't serve any other purpose. The Russians are not a threat to the health, safety, and welfare of the American public. And the Chinese are not a threat to the health, safety, and welfare of the American public. And probably if we would stop trying to encircle Russia with our 752 military bases, the Russians might take a little different view of us, and it might help a great deal. You know, you talk about you want peace, you know. It's hard to get or to have peace with somebody that's suspicious of your motivations. I mean, it's just the way reality is. So when we're taking a look here at the book here called Lies My Teacher Told Me, it's written by a guy by the name of James W. Loewen, L-O-E-W-E-N. I think it's good for white people to look at it so that you can see why it is from the eyes of the other side. I think that all of us white people need to walk a mile in that guy's moccasins just to kind of get the feel of it. And it would be good for the Indians and the blacks and the Mexicans and Chinese and everybody else to take a look at the reality of history. I mean, this is what we actually did. This is what Columbus really did when he was here. Took these people into slavery. Killed them by the thousands. Lies My Teacher Told Me by James W. Loewen. Go to Barnes & Noble. I think you can get a copy. Yeah, I got to give you a final reminder here. We're about out of time here, children. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.